The federal government has sent $20 billion to American farmers and landowners to soften the blow of trade disputes that have cut down on agricultural exports. And if you rank counties in the U.S. that have received the most money, McLean County is near the top. It's not entirely surprising. It's a big county, a lot of fertile soil. The numbers, though, are staggering. New data obtained by WGLT show McLean County farmers have received at least $70 million. In two rounds of trade relief payments since the fall of 2018. Ryan Denham speaks to ag expert and columnist Alan Giebert at his home in Delavan. He expects a third round of payments will come later this year.
The experience says, of course, there's going to be a third round, and it might be even a big round. Moreover, if you look at what's happening in the global economy today and what's happening today, for instance, China just announced that it might not be able to keep its phase one agreement, the U.S.-China trade deal. I never believed it would. I believed that those targets were totally inflated. But now they have reason not to meet them. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot more trouble coming into the United States market from overseas right now. Here's another thing that's happening right now. People really, I think, have overlooked this. Farmers haven't. Look how wet it is around Illinois right now. It's wetter now this March than it was last March. And look at what happened last March and what it led to for, April, May, and June. So we have a real, real weather problem on our hands right now. It's going to demand some action.
Our listeners probably remember there were payments in 2018, 2019, stretching into the beginning of 2020. So we've got, about 2 years of this under our belt now. Big picture, what do you think of this program and the impact it's actually had?
Well, it's been a strategic and tactical disaster. I mean, you give farmers $24 billion, in essence, out of the $26 billion, and you tell them to, we're going to build free trade and free markets. Well, this is the anti-free trade, free market approach. So there's no way you can tell anybody, with a straight face that you're building free trade and free markets with a tariff-built-based market facilitation payment program. What you've done is taken soybeans from, almost $10 in May of 2018 to about $8.50 today, and they're stuck. They're just stuck in that rut. And at the same time, you've opened up the global markets to your competitors at those low prices. Now throw in what's happened with coronavirus and then add to that mix, and this is where it gets really interesting, what's happened to crude oil prices and say since the coronavirus hits. 10 days ago, coronavirus was not an American phenomenon. We were worried about it. But crude oil was $60 a barrel. Today it's 30. Where would American farmers be if in the last 2 weeks soybeans went from $10 to $5 or corn went from $4 to $2? That's where the American petroleum industry, the global petroleum industry is right now. We have no idea the consequences of that's going to be in the capital markets around the world.
Can you expand a little bit on potential coronavirus impact on the agricultural world?
Let's go with what we do know. We do know, for instance, China, as a nation, shut down for about 45 days. It's gearing back up. We don't know how. We don't know what they did. We don't know if the data is correct. Did they lock people in? Nobody really knows. How did they halt this? Is it halted? Nobody really knows. But let's go with the 45 days. So that country shut down, in essence, for 45 days. That's 12% of a year. 12%. Now think about that in terms of gross domestic product. China's gross domestic product is going to fall by 12% this year. Maybe not 12, but more than 8 or 9. What happens if that strikes, other nations? We kind of laugh, or you hear people laughing, well, it's in Italy and they shut the whole country down. Italy's the seventh largest economy in the world, folks. It's nothing to sneeze at, no pun intended. Now, you do that in Germany or Great Britain or here in the United States, it doesn't matter what the weather is here for farmers. It doesn't matter what price corn and soybeans is here for farmers this year. What's going to matter is whether or not we slip into recession or just crash into recession. And then the whole world's going to change in about 60 days.
We're just over 3 years now into the Trump administration, right? January of 2017 to now. How would you grade its approach to trade policy?
The funny thing about the Trump administration's trade policy is that it's the trade policy of one guy. You know, I have no doubt that nearly everyone in the Trump administration thinks tariff policy is the worst policy you could ever come up with if you think you're going to expand trade. Because tariff policy flies in the face of that directly. It limits trade. And when you have the president who claims, you know, the countries that you have the tariffs on, like China, are paying the tariffs, when you have, and the businessmen here in America say, no, we're paying it. When you have those conflicts like that, policy choices, they stagnate. Nothing happens because you have the most powerful person in the world behind the policy he chooses. Gary Cohn was, you know, was an economic advisor in the Trump administration early on, who left the administration over tariff policies. He actually knew how it was going to work. But we don't have anyone there now who will challenge the president. People forget. The tariff policies are still in place. We just backed them off a little bit from 30 to 25%. They're still in place. That's why, along with coronavirus now, of course, global trade is all but shut down in agriculture. So you couldn't pick a worse combination, a hard-headed, foolish policy with now a global pandemic. That's like throwing gasoline on a fire.
Well, to drill down into one of them, the phase one of the China agreement. So what did you think of it in January when it was first announced? And then how was your views of it sort of evolve, especially now that we have the coronavirus threat sort of shaping what China is or is not going to be able to do?
Well, in a word, the phase one was undoable. Everyone who's ever looked at the figures and the facts that China promised to get, and we don't have confirmation on that actually yet, too, knew it was undoable. It's totally undoable. And now that coronavirus has hit, the Trump administration almost has stumbled into a lucked-out strategy. Well, they can't do it now, so there's not going to be a phase two or a phase three. Here's what I also know about the Trump trade policy and the way it's approached. It's been handled. We have I call it NAFTA 2.0, the upgrade of old NAFTA. You talk to any trade expert you see, and over 30 years is going to improve trade by a minuscule of, 0.2% per year. That's not a big deal. That's not a change. That's nothing, really. What it did give, however, is the American president or Congress to back out of that deal every 5 years, just with notice. That's really what the president wanted. Now he has that authority. Is that a good idea? I don't know. But I do know that NAFTA 2.0 or UMSCA or whatever they want to call it is meaningless to American farmers, even American dairy. It's like 2% of Wisconsin's production will be exported to where? To Canada, if and when it takes it. So there's no promises here. When you talk about free trade, remember the first word, free. This is a free ride for somebody, but it's not going to be farmers. The only way you compete is to lower your prices in the global market. America is 25% of the global economy. Everyone is fighting to get to our market. And we think we should fight to be in their market when they don't have money? We have the money. That's why everybody's coming here. That's a simple rule. You're not going to see the values of American ag exports climb. You may see the volumes climb, but not the values. And that's where we are in American agriculture. We produce volume. We're a commodity producer.
Well, when we in the media talk about farmers, we are often caught up in trade policy, like you and I were just doing there. But in our past conversations, you and I know you like to talk about food policy. So in your view, can you help our listeners understand the distinctions between trade policy, food policy, ag policy, and where we have maybe put too much emphasis from a political standpoint and maybe not enough?
Ag policy is the big umbrella. And under ag policy, you'll see food policy, you'll see trade policy, you'll see these other arms holding the umbrella up. They're all essential arms. I think the Farm Bill, current Farm Bill, has maybe 11 different parts to it. You know, food supplement policy, trade policy, conservation policy, water policy, things like that. All are elements to the ag policy, which means there are a lot of approaches to writing a Farm Bill. one of the biggest approaches, the approach in the last 25 to 30 years in American ag policy making, is trade. We have oriented American agriculture to be an exporter, which means we have a lot of eggs in one basket. And like I said earlier, this is the biggest market in the world. Why aren't we more aimed at this market? Well, we are a commodity producer. We want to produce large, fast, and now we've set up a whole infrastructure for exports, rivers, railroads, ports. Now, I believe that the future, while it can be still commodity agriculture, still be export-centered, maybe even export-based, not centered, it should also include food policy. Because we have fewer and fewer farmers, just as a electoral fact, and more consumers. And when you're asking taxpayers to give, the American taxpayers to give American farmers upwards of $20 billion a year, they're going to want something in return. What do you give them in return? We give them what they want. What do they want? They want safe food. They want reasonably priced food. They don't want to have to be GMOs or whatever. Listen to the consumer. Agriculture, American agriculture, is one of the few industries in the world that I know that tells their buyers, their target markets, you're wrong. We know better than you. Here's what you want. That's not going to last with this new generation, with your millennial generation. They have the knowledge, which is really key, and now they're gaining the political and monetary force to change this market. You better get ahead of it. I'm not saying wipe out where we are. Here's what I would like to see. I'd like to see almost what we in the old corporate world call a dual ladder. You can have both strategies, a farm and a food policy. But for every dollar you give to farmers in direct compensation, like market facilitation payments, take 20 cents of it and give it to people out here who are actually growing food, local markets, meat, vegetables, grains. I've got a farmer friend here in Illinois who grows 1,200 acres of organic small grains, oats, flax, wheats, all kinds of small grains, making a fortune. Those markets are out there if you want to search them out. And they're growing. So if one of the consequences of being so focused on ag commodities is now you're in a market treadmill like we are today, farmers are finally going to turn their head a little bit and say, what are the other opportunities out there? Well, the big opportunity is growing food. This whole organic market, $60, $80 billion, depending upon who you listen to each and every year, grew with zero help from the government. Think if you gave them $2 billion to build markets or food hubs or something, what would happen? And how exportable that food would be. You have how many people within 150 miles of, say, Bloomington Normal that you could truck fresh food? We did. We used to. Chicago, Bloomington, Champaign, Peoria, Galesburg, Mattoon. There's, 6-7 million people here? They eat every day, three times a day.
There is one part of the Farm Bill that is food-related, at least food-adjacent, right? The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, a SNAP, also used to be called food stamps. The Trump administration is now rolling out the first of three changes to SNAP. This first one is going to make it harder for able-bodied adults without dependents to continue to get food stamps. The administration says it'll get people working, save over $5 billion over 5 years. In the context of what you just said about shifting our thinking on food policy, what do you think of this approach to the SNAP program and how it fits into larger issues?
Well, $5 billion over 5 years is a $1 billion savings a year. There's more fraud in the crop insurance program in 1 year than there is in, that savings will cover. So it's really a red herring. It's a bloody shirt. It's a cultural issue that conservatives like to use as a cudgel to beat, mostly Democrats over the head with and saying, these poor people ought to work. Most of them do. I know social workers who say their average SNAP benefit received by their clientele. Now, when they get to social workers, you're pretty poor. You're pretty desperate. The average monthly SNAP benefit's $153. Now, try to live 30 days off $153, $5 a day off of food. You can't do it. Not even our government expects you to do it. And that's why most of these people are employed. They're poor, and they're employed, and they're using food stamps. Food, when you call it SNAP, I call it food stamps. SNAP benefits per month go as low as $16. Can you imagine getting $16 for food stamps a month? What would that buy? And they all, and I've heard critics claim, you know, they buy lobster, they buy soda, they don't either. You can't do it. It's against the law. So this is a culture, you know, a battle in the culture wars. That's fine. Everybody gets it. But we also know that food stamps benefits in the last 10 years have gone from a billion per year to about 68 billion. So it's cut not only by 25%, by 35%. We also know that only 65% of the people who actually qualify for food stamps sign up for it. And do you know why? These states make it too hard for these people who actually qualify. Here's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see 66% of the farmers sign up for the farm program benefits, and the other 30% leave it on the table. Do you see that? No, the farm program sign up is 99.9%. And I'll tell you what else it is. Totally voluntary.
That's ag expert and columnist Alan Giebert speaking with Ryan Denham at his home.